We've had like almost like the Boys Club here, you know, with constant speakers. And when, and I thought of, I wanted to have somebody, you know, that could come and talk. There's a person that always smiles at me. She always has something positive to say, always works a great program, and just does nothing but exudes love. So that may not have been the case when she was drinking, but we're going to find that out tonight. So without any further ado, Dixie, why don't you come on up and...
Thank you, everybody. Yeah, when I was drinking, I was very friendly. I'm a Dixie alcoholic. I became a bar drinker, and I danced on tables. I don't remember, but they told me I did. They told me I closed down bars. I don't remember a lot of what I did or who I was with or anything. That it's a horrible way for a woman to live, believe me. It's very, like it says in the big book, you know, I forget the words, but yeah, horrible. Anyway, as Tom said, we're neighbors. Also his sister who trims my cat's nails for me. And when I approached him on this, I said, you know, have you ever spoken? He said, well, nobody's ever asked me. And I said, well, you can't say that anymore. Anyway, thank you. I don't have a canned story like some people do. I don't remember a lot of stuff and I jump around. That's just what I do. Anyway, I grew up in Sonoma, California. I'm a native daughter of the Golden West, whatever they call it. I grew up on a ranch. I had my own horse. I had a red cowgirl hat and red boots. And my father left home when I was a year old. And growing up, I used to fantasize that, you know, he would get married and have a home and I could go live with them. But it never happened. He milked cows. He lived on dairies the rest of his working life. Lived in, you know, bunk houses. And wasn't very much part of my life. I realize now he was very depressed. He was an alcoholic, which I didn't know then. I didn't even know what one was until I got here after a while. And my mother had boyfriends. And they weren't always the nicest people. There was a lot went on that I don't think she knew about. If she did, she swept it under the rug because she wanted to keep them around. And it had a lasting impact on my life, not in a good way. I've been married a few times, had a lot of relationships, none of them ever last. And that's okay though. Today I'm alone and I'm happy. I just ended a 6-year relationship, sort of in the program, sort of. I just woke up one morning and said, I can't do this anymore. I cannot be with someone who doesn't work the program and who uses outside issues. I can't do it. To me, someone who does not work the AA program has a very negative, unhappy life. And I'm not like that. I'm very happy. I like people. I love people. I love all you guys. You're my family, you know? Hi, Patrick. So anyway, you know, even in my childhood and my teenage years, there's a lot I don't remember. I had a lot of emotional blank years. I made it through high school and 2 years in Santa Rosa Junior College. And I learned to drink in college. You know, I went to my first party and someone handed me a glass of Thunderbird wine.
Yeah.
And it went chuk, 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 chuk. I came to on the bathroom floor later on, and people walking over me, so to speak. I guess I'd been sick, probably, I don't know. And I got up and I went out and had another drink. You know, and I thought that was normal. And the guy I rode home with, he was in college, and he had this little sports car, and this is Santa Rosa, and we go up the main street of Santa Rosa. It's dead. There's nobody around. He's going zoom, and the cops, you know, pulled him over. and they knew him. And they let me drive his little MG to my place, and they took him to jail. And afterwards, the kids told me, oh, yeah, he's an alcoholic. He's on the wagon. He was on the wagon then. I didn't know what they meant. I didn't know what that meant. Anyway, I didn't pursue that, thank God. But that's how I started drinking, throwing up, blacking out, thinking it was fun. And I did that for many years. Too many years. But I didn't know there was a way out. I just thought that's what life was. And I got married and had a couple little kids. And, you know, I didn't really want children, but this was before the pill, and I didn't know how not get pregnant. He said, don't worry, I'll take care of it. Oh, yeah. 2 kids later. And then I learned how not to have kids. And it was not good, though. You know, when you get married and you have kids, it's supposed to be this wonderful time of your life. You're supposed to be happy and all that. I was a wreck. And when they were little, I was attempting suicide, and, you know, it was awful. I've thrown the pictures away of me during that time because I looked old and haggard and sick, and I was. And I don't want to remember myself that way. I don't want anyone else to see them either. So but we moved to Kansas, where he was from, because I was in and out of psych wards. I was attempting suicide. I was not well. I didn't want to be here. I didn't want to be alive. And he was from a farm family in Kansas, and I'd met them. They were nice people. I thought, you know, that's where my kids should be. But, you know, I reached the point where I thought everybody would be better off without me. And I really believed that. And so we just picked up, we quit jobs, we sold everything, drove to Kansas. God, got there in one of their flash floods. We were the last ones through the road and all that stuff. We lived with his parents for a while. They were good people. And I got a job at Boeing Aircraft back there. That was an experience, not a real good one, but I'm not proud of it, but I was not faithful to that husband. I'm sorry I was that way at that time, and I had grown to hate him and blamed him for all my troubles. I'd taken it from my mother, her, you know, to this husband. Now it was all his fault that I was like this. And I wanted to get even with him. And that's what I thought I was doing. All I was doing was hurting me and the kids. You know, it may have hurt him, I don't know. Never talked about it. You know, I come home late at night, booze on my breath, haven't had sex, and he wouldn't say a word. You know, I wanted him to react, and he wouldn't. So, that, you know, needless to say, we got divorced, and I moved alone down to Los Angeles, and I didn't contact my family, nothing. I got a job right away. I, you know, and boy, did I drink, you know. I thought it was fun then, you know, the big city. I, you know, grew up in this little town of Sonoma when I was little. There were 2,000 people and maybe 3,000. Everybody knew everybody and all your business, and there was nothing to do, and I lived out on a ranch, and God. Here I am in the big city and big city lights and everything open all 24/7, and I discovered bars down there and men, and I just went nuts, you know, just nuts. And I worked in a bank. I was out most of the night partying, and I'd show up in the morning, you know, looking halfway decent, I guess. I eventually had to get a wig because I was too sick to fix my hair in the morning. I could barely get out of bed. And, you know, I realize now I thought I was cute, but I must have looked horrible. Like something a cat wouldn't drag in some days, you know? God. And I became a legal secretary. I had very good skills, and I happened to work in law office through temporary work, and hey, I loved it. I took to it, and they hired me full time. So here I was at, you know, in some pretty nice law offices, downtown LA, like on the 34th floor, overlooking all of LA, and everybody in suits and ties, and, you know, dressed up and looking nice. And I was out most of the night partying, and then here I'd come driving in the morning in these nice law offices, you know, just, and sick and hungover. And I had a boss who covered for me, I realized afterwards, you know, because he got sick and he couldn't work anymore, and not long after that, I was out. I realized he covered a lot for me. And, you know, I don't know if we do people favors if we cover for them like that or not. I don't know. Anyway, you know, I kept a job that way. I never had trouble getting a job in Los Angeles in the 60s, you know. Jobs were plentiful. They were offering full benefits, good insurance. And I would just go out and I'd get a job just like that. And 4 years was as long as they ever kept one. And I'd always leave before they fired me, because I knew it was coming, because of the way I was. And, you know, it was an awful way to live. Anyway, I met, you know, wonderful Mr. Number Two, and he was from New York and very sophisticated and very handsome Irishman. Very yeah, we worked in the bank together, and we got married, but he taught me how to really drink. You know, before that, I just drank whatever was around. He taught me, you know, how to make drinks and the names of them and fancy stuff. On Saturday nights, he used to make these rum drinks, zombies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they go down so nice and easy. And oh, my God, my room, people tell me the rooms were mine went. And I would try to hang on to something. I felt like I was just going to go with it. And I'd be so sick, and yet I'd keep doing it. And we were together 10 years drinking like that. He was a banker and very handsome, too handsome. Women loved him. And he ate it up. So after 10 years, we parted. And boy, I was, I don't know how I made it through those years, you know, but I did somehow. And then I moved to Paradise, California, which is up above Chico, above Sacramento. My mother had a house up there. It was empty. And I wasn't doing so well, so I asked her if I could move up to it. Oh, yeah, she would put my name on the deed. So I had a house. And I was too sick to work. It was 20 miles down the hill to Chico. There was no work in Paradise at that time. So I did get a job in a law office in Chico. Oh, my God. I wasn't there much. And one day I went in. It was payday, so I went in. And he said, yeah. He said, if you hadn't come in today, I was going to fire you. I wasn't surprised. Anyway, after that, I got extremely ill and ended up in a hospital with surgery and on disability for a long time. And so I couldn't work. And so I got married again. I mean, you know. And after I married him, you know, he didn't drink. He wasn't an alcoholic. And I thought, by then I was thinking about, you know, maybe I should cut down. I didn't think about quitting, but, you know, I knew I was overdoing it. And I thought, you know, he didn't like to drink. Maybe that'd be good for me. Well, all it did was make me hide it. His idea of drinking was we'd go out on Saturday night dancing and dinner, and he'd have two drinks. And that was his idea of a good time. Oh, my God. But, and he had a good job at Chico State, but he also did gardening jobs on the side. And at Christmas, these people would give him these big bottles of booze. And they were up in the cupboards, unopened. Okay. He never even opened them. So he left for work early in the morning, and he didn't get home till later at night. He was a workaholic, too. And guess who got into those bottles? And he eventually noticed, you know, and he blamed one of his sons. And I let him, you know. I was going to admit to that. But so he would leave for work, and I would, as soon as I knew his truck was gone, I could hear it going down the hill. Because sometimes he'd come back, he'd forget something. So as soon as I could hear it, you know, way down there, I'd start drinking, like 5, 6 in the morning. And by noon, you know, I was just out of it. And I'd go to sleep, and I'd reset the alarm to wake up before he got home and try to take a shower and try to be normal. God. And he never said anything about it, you know? It just, he was in full denial, too, that anything was wrong. And anyway, one morning, I was sitting there alone in my kitchen with a glass of straight whiskey, which I hated, but it was all I had. And the thought came to me of going to AA. I don't know where that came from. And Paradise was a little town. We had newspaper once a week. And I went through it, and I saw this little bitty ad. Do you have a drinking problem? Call a number. So, you know, I don't know why that morning was different from other mornings or what was different, but I called. And we used to, when I was new, I heard that, you know, your reason for getting here, the person was your Eskimo. Well, the last attorney I worked for was my Eskimo. He was a bad drunk. I mean, wow. He was about to lose his bar license and everything. But I knew his wife, and he had kids, and they had a dog, and they had a house and all that. And I knew he drank, but I didn't know how much. There was a bar called The Melody downstairs from the office. And he'd come in the office at 9 o'clock for a few minutes and just do what he had to do, and he'd go to Melody, and by 11 he was snockered. I couldn't make appointments for him in the office. Half the time he didn't show up at court anymore. He was getting in accidents with the car. He was coming to in the morning in the gutter with a shotgun in his hand, and I thought, oh, you know, how terrible, and blah, 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 you know. And I'm not that bad, you know. Anyway, he was my Eskimo. That was the reason I came to AA. I thought of him. Oh, because he got sober in AA. His wife went to Al-Anon, and she quit bugging him. She quit calling 100 times a day. And through her recovery, he went to AA, and he got sober. He became a nice man. You know, he'd come in the office, he'd actually be in the office, he had clear eyes, he could see people, he appeared in court. You know, his life was improving. He wasn't, you know, coming to in the gutter, he wasn't beating his family or the dog anymore, or wrecking cars. I thought, wow. And that morning I had the thought, you know, if someone could help him and he was that bad off, maybe it could help me. And I didn't want to quit drinking, but I wanted to quit getting drunk. Because I thought that was the problem, not just drink, but being drunk. Because I was a blackout drinker. And when I blacked out, I didn't know where I would end up, who I'd be with, where I'd be, where my car would be, none of that. And so I made the call to that number in that newspaper, a little bitty ad. And it was an answering service down in Chico, and she put me on hold. But I waited. And I really wanted to talk to somebody, but I didn't know what to say, and I just said, you know, where's the meeting? And they had just started up a new women's meeting up in Paradise. They only had about 3 meetings a week at that time. Now they're just all over the place. But then there were like three of them, and they were just starting this women's meeting. It was a whole week away, and I waited for that meeting instead of going in between, you know? I don't know why. Well, yeah, it was crazy. And I went to this first meeting, and it was a women's meeting in a church up in Paradise. And I thought, oh, God, a church? If I have to join the church, I'm out. I want nothing to do with church. Nothing. Anyway, the woman laughed at me. I said, you know, do I have to join the church? She laughed at me. She said, oh, no, honey, come on in. And there were about 20 women that morning, which was unusual. It's usually very small. And I was really impressed. I don't know what I expected, but these women were all well-dressed. A lot of them had jobs. A lot of them were married. They talked about getting their kids back and, you know, just all this stuff. And I was just amazed. I could really relate to them. And I went home and drank. I didn't get drunk, but I drank. And I kept that up for I don't know how long, going just that one meeting and going home and drinking. You know, I have no idea how long I did that, but it was a while. And I was getting chummy with some of the men, and thank God for the women in this program. They saved my life. They got together and decided, you know, I was going to stick with the women, and one of the women said, I'm your sponsor, and you're going to do this and this and this. And I said, okay. You know, I was done. I was scared. I just didn't know what was going to happen to me. And I was afraid to tell my then husband that I couldn't quit drinking. You know, I thought, oh my God, we got this nice home and everything, and I can't work the way I am. I can't, you know, he'll kick me out. So I was afraid to tell him. And so these women just, they saved my life, you know. And one of them especially, they wanted my phone number. Oh my God, no. And, you know, they gave me phone numbers, and I thought, well, I don't want to bother anybody. And I told one of them, well, you know, I start drinking like 5, 6 in the morning. I can't call anybody then. She said, honey, I'm up at 5. You can call me anytime. They had an answer for everything, you know. And but the one lady, for some reason, I did give her my number. And she would call me and say, be ready. I'm going to pick you up at so-and-so. And I didn't really want to. I wouldn't have kept going if it weren't for her. But I was afraid to tell her no. So, okay. So she kept me going to meetings. And the weird thing is, you never know who's going to help you or how, whatever, because she was married. They had a home up there. And she took me to her house one day. And she showed me, she had a bottle of wine in the kitchen. And she said, oh, yeah, it's okay to have a glass of wine if you have, like, an Italian dinner or something. thank God, I was new, but I knew, that's not right. And the sad part is that a year, less than a year later, my husband and I were out having dinner in a restaurant, and she and her husband were in there, and they were drinking. And she didn't really want to see me, but, and not long after that, she died. Yeah. And yet she helped me so much. You know, you just never know where help comes from. And, God, I had more fun in that first year in Paradise than I'd ever had in my whole life, and I remembered it, you know? And Paradise, I don't know if any of you know, been there, but it's a mountain community. It used to be a little gambling mecca up in the mountains, and it's now it's big, it's incorporated, it's a big city, and they got meetings all over the place all the time. But then it was still very small, very pretty. And 12 people in a meeting, we considered it big. You know, meetings were small, there weren't that many people up there then. And so we were very close. We were in each other's houses. Al-Anon and AA were friendly back then. They became unfriendly, but we were in each other's houses. We all helped each other. And I had more fun. God, it was fun. And my husband didn't like me going out at night and with strange people. So he started coming to meetings with me. And, that was a trip. Anyway, he said we were having, everybody was having sex with everybody. And I said, they are? Where? Yeah. He said, is that what you want? You know, all these people are divorced and blah, 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 and they're running around. Anyway, he was very much against AA. And he accused me of, you know, being too friendly with all the guys and blah, blah, blah. And, one Sunday night was a speaker meeting that we were going to go, and he wasn't getting ready. He was just laying on the bed. I said, come on, get ready, you know. He said, no, come here. I said, no, I'm going to this speaker meeting. Come on. He said, oh, you're just going to go see so-and-so. No, I'm going to hear the speaker. So he did come, but, you know, stuff like that. God, so stupid. And one Saturday night, one of the women had a home with a big backyard with a big old barbecue pit and logs around. We had a fire and a potluck and a meeting out by the fire. And I had snuck out of the house under false pretenses to go to that meeting. And it was hard to find. It was in the woods. Anyway, my husband found it. He comes tearing up there in his little yellow truck, and he gets out. And when he was mad, his face would be bright red. He would practically jump up and down. And he comes over there and gets right in front of me. You know, this shit's got to stop. You got to stay home. Right in front of all these people, you know. And that's all I remember that meeting. I know I just sat there and stayed through the meeting, and he did too, and they told him, sit down and be quiet. And, they told me afterwards they were ready to pounce on him if he touched me. But I don't remember any more of the meeting. Not long after that, you know, he told me I could have AA or him. But, and I said, bye. I had to have AA, and I still do. That's why I just ended something, because this is the most important thing in my whole life, my higher power of the program, all you guys, everything that goes with the big book, the whole package. It's not just one thing. Mm-hmm. And what does 28 mean?
1 minute. You're doing great. Keep on going.
Oh.
You're doing great. You can call it 9. You can keep going.
Oh, God.
Whatever you want. Other people walk talk till 11, so.
Oh, no. Anyway, I've had chances to get married in AA again, but I said no. I knew it would not work. It would not last. I've gotten used to being alone. I enjoy it. I'm very set in my ways. I'm a little bit self-centered, and I work on it, but I know I am. I'm better than I was. And I've done some things in sobriety that I said I would never do. I'd never say never. You might do them. You know, one thing was I said I would never, ever be with a married man sober. I was sorry I did it when I was drinking. And, my kicker is just broken. And, you know, paradise, I say it was beautiful, and it was a summer evening, and this guy says, you want to go for a ride? Why not? You know, and finally my sponsor one day said, how much do you know about this man? I said, well, not much. Why? He's married. Oh, crap. But, you know, I had fallen hard again, and it was the most painful year of my life, I think, because it was just on and off, the pulling and the pushing, and it was horrible. And then his wife came to AA, and his wife attempted suicide. You know, the whole thing was a mess. And I've not done it since. But I don't say I'll never do something because I might do it. you know, I don't want to get myself or anybody else in trouble. I want to keep serenity in my life. I have a good clean life today, and I want to keep it that way. And all of a sudden it's like, oh my God. But I can't say enough for the women in the program wherever I've lived. You know, I like you guys. I like kidding around and all that, but it's the women who have saved me and continue to. I have some really good women friends. I've been talking for some time to my sponsor about the so-called relationship, and she said, when the time is right, you'll know it. And I woke up one morning and I can't do this anymore. That's it. And it feels so good. I feel so free. And it just feels so good. I'm so grateful that I not only came to AA, but that I stayed here long enough for it to sink in. Because I said I kept drinking for a while. I quit getting drunk, so I thought that was an improvement. I don't think it's still drinking. And I never got really heavy into drugs, thank God. But in my 20s, when I was in those psych wards, they did introduce me. Each time I'd go in, I'd come out with another pretty different colored pill. And one day, you know, I'd come home and I'd taken stuff and drank, which they tell you not to do, but heck. And I went to the grocery store, and I was going to write a check for the grocery. I couldn't write. And that scared the living hell out of me. So I threw all the pills away. I kept drinking, but I threw everything away. And I found out later on, you know, I really could have gone into convulsions and died doing that. But I didn't care. I didn't want to affect my head that way anymore. And, you know, not being able to write, oh my God, what have I done to my brain? Something with the motor skill, you know, and it did come back. And I did go back to see the doctor one time and told him, and he was furious with me. Oh, you need that stuff. No, I don't. And that's my big experience, you know, with drugs. I've been, you know, around stuff, but I'm scared of drugs. I don't want, you know, alcohol did enough damage to me. My first Christmas that I was going to be alone was hard. And I didn't really want to be alone, but I didn't want to be with my family, his family, blah, blah, blah. So I took off to Arizona. I hadn't seen my brother for 15 years, and he lived down there, Tucson. And so I drove down there. And I got there, and it was Christmas, beautiful, 75 degrees. And went in, I said, well, what have you got to drink? He says, nothing. He didn't drink. So I immediately went to the store and bought a big supply of liquor. And all his friends drank.
Right.
So he had like a, he was married to an Indian woman who had gotten drunk and wrecked their car, and she was in the hospital. So he was there alone with her sister, who was also a drunk. And then these people just came and went all the time. It was like a hotel. And I thought it was great. They all drank, and they used drugs too, which I didn't do, but I thought it was great. And I stayed 12 days. I was having so much fun. And I drove home back to LA. I was so sick. Oh, wow. Because I'd been drunk that whole time, and out in the desert, and I could have been left out in the desert and died, and no one ever would have known where I was. That happens all the time out in the deserts. People just, they disappear, you know? God, and, you know, it's funny, sometimes now when I'm walking home to the 1600 Club, not too long ago, I was crossing Broadway in Maine, and just as I got on the street, you know, this guy in this nice pickup, and he looked nice, you know, and he pulls up. And at first I thought it was, you know, one of you guys from AA. And, you know, here's a complete stranger, you know, like, no thank you. But, you know, in my drinking days, I would have gone with that man. Oh, my God. And I'm still alive. I never had anything really, really bad. I've been raped, but I think all alcoholic women who hang around bars have had that happen. But, I mean, you know, I haven't been killed or left by the side of the road. And I'm so blessed. I didn't take care of myself. I didn't watch out for me. And today I do. You know, I want to stay happy and healthy and remain a part of you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Nikki. Let's give Dixie another round of applause.